You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the Midside, where we record an audio-only show strictly for the purpose of oppressing deaf people. And if you enjoy oppressing deaf people, please tell a friend about our show so we can all oppress deaf people together. Or alternately, you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, let us know how awesome or awful our oppression is, or fund our efforts to oppress deaf people, patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/patreon. There you can pay per episode, not a flat fee, but every time we release content, you would be donating. Also, we put up Patreon exclusive episodes. This past week, we did an episode on the movie Lucy starring Scarlett Johansson, written and directed by Luc Besson, or Besson. I always say that backwards for some reason. Luc Besson, because he's French, to get ready for Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. And as Daniel has pointed out in previous weeks, I always like to do this little
charade.
Facade. The charade. Yeah, I was going to say facade, but the charade that there are other hosts here. But there are other hosts here. One of them is Daniel. He's coming from D.C. Daniel, What do you think of this whole TB12, Tom Brady, Madden curse thing? Is he so Teflon now? Is he so above reproach that he can just, like, turn his whole career into a joke? Is that what's going on?
He's crossed that line of he was falsely held up as this person we should ridicule and dislike. And he has so proven the critics wrong that he's passed over into this sort of sublime nirvana state of human being where he doesn't have to – he literally is Dagny post-opening her eyes in the gulch saying, we never had to take any of it seriously, did we?
It's really interesting you just used the word nirvana, because when I conceptualized asking about this pre-show, one of the words I thought of using was to ask if Tom Brady reached nirvana. How terrifying is that?
We're basically the same person. Yes, if anyone hasn't seen these, Tom Brady is the news is that he's going to be on the cover of the next edition of Madden, which is like Madden 400 or something. I don't know how many versions they've released, but it's...
They just do it by year now.
Oh, they just do it by year now. So it's
the
2018 version then?
Yes, anyway. And it's the GOAT edition. Yes. The GOAT edition.
Which is awesome. And there's apparently
be buying this.
A curse...
I don't usually buy Madden.
...associated with this, where the person who is on the cover of Madden the next year has a horrible year.
Or gets hurt. Even though this curse has been refuted, there have been players who have good seasons after being on the cover. So.
Yes, it's been refuted by the fact that curses don't exist.
That was my favorite thing about Brady's first video.
So he released
some
videos.
Guys, there's no such thing as curses. It's like, it was literally, it's a good metaphor, Dagny in the gulch after waking up. Like, that's literally what he was doing. He's like, you guys are dumb.
Yeah, and so then he's been releasing these other videos. One I thought was very funny of him walking into the TB12 boardroom, but he's in a plastic bubble that has been apparently mandated by the TB12 board now that he's on the cover of Madden. And he gives them this, rah-rah quarterback speech about how, curses don't exist and we're here to reach our potential and our greatness. And then the guy who put him in the bubble is like, yeah, you're right. This is a bad idea. So here's another idea, and it's basically just a bigger bubble.
Can we do a little analysis of that very quickly?
Yeah.
Because the typical way of ending a video of this nature would have him, Brady, get hurt. That would have been the punchline. Oh, there's no curse, blah, 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 and then he actually gets hurt after he takes the bubble off. But they actually went the route of making the stupid people look even stupider. I think that's important that's the route they went.
Yeah, he didn't do the subversive route. He didn't do the, I'm going to make fun of my, he's sort of laughing, showing that he has a sense of humor without deprecating himself, which is interesting.
Right, which the getting hurt would have been that.
Yes, indeed. And then by the way, the hashtag at the end of the video is #FreeBrady.
I can't believe that he's like appropriating that and it's become something new now.
That's what Tom Brady does, Justin. He takes the horror that the league gives him and he appropriates it and makes himself awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you have all this money, you can pay the best writers and marketing people to work for you. So that's probably what's going on, too.
All that Giselle money.
Also here, as you've heard before, because he always fucking laughs in the opening every fucking time.
How dare you, James? How dare you laugh at funny things? You should be silent because you're supposed to not be here. Yes.
That was a comment on the site. Somebody was really mad about your hyena laugh, James.
I'll just sit silently here from now on. I'll just sit here, just waiting to talk.
Well, that's what I replied on the side. I was like, I'll tell him not to laugh at my funny jokes.
Right.
That's right.
Well, how are you doing, James? Anything? Are you cursed with anything, James?
No curses. No curses at all, in fact. Curse free. So sorry about all the, sorry to oppress all the people with curses. my hearing still works, so sorry to oppress all the people who can't hear. You know, I woke up this morning, heard my alarm clock. That allowed me to wake up, listened to...
You know, I've never thought of that. How do deaf people wake up in the morning?
I don't know. I don't know. That's part of their...
Do they have a device that hits them?
That's part of their, oppression that you are foisting upon them, Justin. I listened...
Is there, like, a giant, mallet? That hits them in the head every morning?
It could be. Like the Grinch?
Yeah, like the Grinch, exactly.
It's more like those cartoons where the alarm goes off and the bed shoots straight up into the air.
Yeah.
It just like rolls them out of bed into the shower. That's how it works.
Deaf people who are listening to this show, please call in and tell us the answer.
Yes, indeed.
That's eventually how they're going to eliminate this new... medium of free ideas when you see with the Rubin Report and Ben Shapiro and Sam Harris and the Midside and Yaron Brook. We're of course at the top of that list. They're going to just basically say like, you need to provide your content to deaf people or we just won't let you do it. And you know what? Never mind. No, that's a terrible idea. That won't work.
It already exists. The ADA, to have your website be ADA compliant, any audio commentary or any video audio, you need to have closed captioning for it.
That can't be true, because how is it? Because a place like Ben Shapiro or the Rubin Report, they don't have money to have someone transcribing the show like that, or do they?
It only applies. Basically, it applies to any institution getting public funds, but. That doesn't mean that someone can't sue you for not having these things available. It's just basically whether or not someone chooses to sue you or not.
Fuck!
Yeah. We'll see those lawsuits happen again in the future. Again, I say again. They'll also start happening. Because right now, everyone's doing the physical... I don't know why I'm talking about this, but we'll move on. Everyone's doing the physical ADA lawsuits, but they will start doing the digital ADA lawsuits eventually. And they'll start doing them eventually because... you can't really predict what government's going to do anymore because of the fucking ridiculous firings and shit. We don't even know what's happening anymore. Let's talk about that in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a bad.
This week, Trump fired FBI Director James Comey out of a cannon and straight into our hearts. Yes, the FBI director who has been controversial for his handling of the Hillary Clinton email scandal was ousted by the president in a surprise move that has stunned and shaken Washington to its core. If I have to read the phrase stunned and shaken and then whoever to their core again... I'll fucking have a bowel movement. I don't know what I'll do.
I know what I'm texting you all this week.
Every article about this has stunned and shaken somewhere in it. Every single one.
Is that like a James Bond thing?
At least they're consistent.
That would be stirred. But anyway. So Trump explained the firing of Comey, basically saying that Comey had lost Trump's trust because of his mishandling of the Clinton emails, and in fact, it was on the recommendation of Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Deputy Attorney General other guy that Trump decided to fire Comey midweek. He sent him this letter. It's basically like, it's not you, it's me, but also it's you letter. This is what, there are some things where I think our president is certifiable. And this paragraph from the letter that he wrote is one of those things. Quote, this is Trump writing, by the way. Quote, while I greatly appreciate you informing me on three separate occasions that I am not under investigation, I nevertheless concur with the judgment of the Department of Justice that you are not able to effectively lead the Bureau. Doesn't the logic of that sentence imply that because Trump is not under investigation, Comey is not able to effectively lead the Bureau?
Daniel, there is no logic to this sentence. It's one sentence or this paragraph. There is a sentence with one thing, and then there is a sentence with another thing being said.
He's trying to say the opposite, Daniel.
I know.
He's trying to say that the fact that you're not investigating me like the left is pressuring you to proves that you're competent, but these other people are telling me you're not competent, therefore I have to fire you. He's thanking him and making himself seem magnanimous at the same time.
For some reason, even that interpretation of that jumble of words that we call a sentence doesn't make me think any higher of him.
No, I agree.
By the way, you're super competent, but I'm going to fire you anyway because you're super competent.
Exactly. Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah. So,
which, by the way, that happened on many a season of The Celebrity Apprentice. My favorite was when he fired Penn Jillette for coming up with a good slogan. He's like, your slogan would offend people because it makes people have to earn things. Because they were trying to come up with like a fragrance for like people who were like rich and successful. So Penn Jillette was like, oh, why don't we use the slogan, the tagline, you earned it. And Trump was like, oh, that would make people offended because they would feel like it's something they have to earn.
God.
So you're fired. And I was like, what?
I feel like that's such a telling cultural moment, you know, that face-off between Penn Jillette and Donald Trump. That is, it's definitely something that needs to be brought up more often.
This was my entire argument against Trump when he first started running. People were like, why would you never vote for him? I go, because he fired Penn Jillette twice on The Celebrity Apprentice. And the second time he fired him, he brought him all the way to the finals versus Trace Adkins, made him apologize publicly on television, and then fired him anyway. Publicly on live television, and then fired him anyway. Do I want that person as commander-in-chief, where you would do that to Penn Jillette, one of the best living people?
One of the best living people.
I'm not exaggerating.
So regardless of Penn Jillette, I actually want to highlight a paragraph in this story. And this is Daniel already covered part of this, but it's worth repeating. Quote, the officials said that Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the Deputy Attorney General, other guy named Rod J. Rosenstein, pushed for Mr. Comey's dismissal. But many in Washington, including veteran FBI officers, saw a carefully choreographed effort by the president to create a pretense for the takedown of the president's FBI tormentor. Basically, what happened is, it's not a carefully choreographed effort. You mean like everyone saw Donald Trump go over and visit Jeff Sessions and Rod and Mr. Rod so that and clearly telling them like, okay, I want you to write a letter saying that Comey is incompetent and then I will fire him because he is incompetent. That's not careful choreography. We're not dealing with Hillary Clinton here. Like, this is Trump trying to do a Hillary Clinton and just failing.
Wait, this Rod Stewart is the Eternal General?
Rod Stewart is the Eternal General. That's right.
I thought Internal General, but yes. This is Trump trying... You're right, James. This is Trump trying to be politically savvy and failing because he's stupid. And I'd say that 100% seriously. I am now convinced, after all these weeks where I gave some benefit of the doubt that Trump is some political mastermind, that he is in fact a fucking moron.
I have an alternate theory.
He's a liar? Because those are the two. It's either stupid or liar.
Or a stupid liar.
No, I have an alternate theory.
Okay.
I think Trump sits around and goes, how can I make things as difficult as possible and still get out of them? I think he's just fucking with the entire country. He's like, in what way can I fire the FBI director and make this as much of a controversy as possible and still survive? That's what I think he's doing. Why did he wait till now? Why did he do it in the middle of the week? And why did he, like, let everyone see what he was doing? The only possible explanation is he's fucking with us. That's it.
Oh, my God. That may be true. Daniel, that may be completely true. Think about it. When has Trump, since he's been elected, since he started running, when has Trump not been on our minds for either a positive or negative reason? When?
Well, that's
never.
True.
It must. Maybe it's on purpose. Justin could be totally right. He's just like, look, I could let this Russia thing blow over, or I could fire Comey and make it look like I could fire. He's probably doesn't even have it that well thought out. Just I could fire Comey. That'll make the left think that I'm covering something up. That'll, you know, who the fuck knows? Even if he is covering something up, I don't put it past him to just want the attention.
That's more what it is. I don't think it's like some brilliant scheme and it's intentional.
He just wants the attention. Yeah, he just wants the attention, regardless of whether these Russia allegations are true or not.
So Daniel, that would go to your stupid point. Really.
I would give
really
him,
but
yeah,
Emmy point
for the directing he's doing right now for reality television.
Oh yeah, 100%.
It is certainly better than anything I've ever seen in the reality sphere. So.
It's going to get even better when Kanye and Kim are in the White House next.
Oh, God. But I would buy the – okay, so there's some amount of me that would buy the – he's just sort of doing this because he wants attention. That still goes into the stupid bucket.
Agreed.
But any of the other sort of like – you know, he's getting people to talk about Russia so that he can get other things done. He's distracting us so he can do things behind the scenes. I would be totally into that. If he was fucking doing anything.
I don't think he's doing anything behind the scenes. I think he just likes the attention. I think all of our theories are kind of right. He's stupid and just acting out of what he knows how to do, which is get people's attention, which is all he's ever wanted to begin with. And so he just acts in any way he thinks that will achieve that end. There's no strategy. There's no 4D underwater backgammon, as Ben Shapiro said. But, like,
It's not just attention, James. It's attention of the world's against me and nobody believes in me and I'm going to prove them wrong. So he has to keep backing himself into corners to make himself look like the victim. That's what his entire campaign was run upon.
I don't think there's any... Yeah.
People are going to want him to actually get out of that. I don't think he's capable.
Oh, I agree.
I don't think showing everyone who's boss at the end is part of the plan. I think he just likes the attention and that's it.
It's all insane. I'll give you that. And the Washington Post is reporting today, this is not part of the story, so you two are hearing this for the first time, but they're reporting today that there's basically chaos over in the White House. And not the kind of chaos that is typical of White Houses where there's a constant, you know, frenzy of action, but basically his aides don't know what to do. They're paranoid. Trump is paranoid. No one has any been given any directions on where to go with this Comey thing. And all Trump apparently is trying to do is find someone who is a scapegoat for what is now looked at as a bad decision of firing Comey.
Wow.
Isn't this what we want our government to be like, though? I mean, there's no way they can accomplish anything right now. I mean, you know those interns are just running around watching Hulu and Netflix. Like, isn't that the government inefficiency we want?
I hate to say this, but you may be right.
Yeah, certainly it's better than the efficient, progressive machine that would have been the Hillary Clinton White House. But at the same time, it's just like, it's embarrassing. I feel like, you know, the Statue of Liberty is like wanting to hang her head in shame behind that book she's holding. It's just, we have a fucking idiot as our president.
Like, you know it's bad when Greg Popovich, the coach of the Spurs before game one of the Western Conference Final against the Golden State Warriors, is saying exactly what you just said, Daniel. He said that in his press conference. That's how you know it's bad.
Yeah. You know it's bad when someone who does something that I have no idea what you're talking about repeats what I say. Indeed. It's
one of the best basketball coaches ever.
That, yes, indeed. So I don't know where we go from here with the Comey thing. I personally don't think Trump did it because he thought this would end the investigation of him, if there is an investigation about the Russia scandal, because not even someone that stupid could be that stupid. When you fire the head of the head of the FBI or the head of a police department, it doesn't end all investigations that that department is doing. Those investigations continue.
Well, the new guy came out and said that he was going to continue it, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and also every other senator who wants any credibility has come out and said we should have an independent investigation if the FBI isn't going to continue. So not even the moron who is the commander-in-chief could be that idiotic to think this would end an investigation. So I don't know what the strategic value was of firing him now. He had the opportunity to fire him at the beginning of his term. And he
Yeah, when he had an actual excuse.
Yeah, he specifically wanted to bring Comey with him into the new administration because he said he was an upstanding guy.
That's what I mean, where he does the thing that's the most difficult for himself. Like, what worse could he have done for himself right now?
I don't know. Piss out the second floor window of the White House onto
the
Rose
Garden.
You're
telling me that's going to happen when he's a lame duck president? Can you imagine what he's going to do?
Oh my God. I don't even want to think about it.
I don't know what's going on anymore.
Did anyone use the headline Comey over?
No, Justin. Because if they did, there would be hell to pay. Yes.
Could it just be that Donald Trump had gone, you know, a full 100 days and he realized that he hadn't told anyone you're fired yet?
He fired Flynn. Didn't they fire? Anyway, I don't care. I don't fucking care anymore. Donald Trump's an idiot. Let's move on to another idiot, the mayor of Seattle. Hard shift to the left here. Ed Murray, the mayor of Seattle, has changed the rules on a soda tax to include diet soft drinks instead of only sugary soft drinks because wealthier white people drink more diet soda. Yes, indeed. The Seattle Times reports that Mayor Ed Murray's soda tax legislation led to criticism it was unfair because white and affluent people tend to drink more diet drinks. So the mayor's revised proposal lowers the tax rate slightly and adds diet soda. The changes were recommendations that emerged when staff from the mayor's office and the office of the council member, blah, 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 studied disparate impacts the tax could have on people with low incomes and people of color. That work involved conversations with community advocates, public health professionals, and business owners, according to the mayor. After Murray's initial announcement, some suggested the exclusion of beverages with artificial sweeteners would be unfair because affluent white people tend to consume more diet drinks. So, Justin, disparate impact of tax on sodas, yay or nay?
What? I didn't, like, that's just word gibberish to me. Like, what are you even talking about? Who is the person who comes up with, oh yeah, well, you know, this isn't fair because white people drink more diet soda? Who fucking comes up with that? Is that a real statistic? Do white people drink more diet soda?
Sounds racist.
Is that true? Are we that duped? Are we that stupid as white people that we believe, oh yeah, you know, diet soda is actually healthier than regular soda, so we're going to drink more of it? Are we that fucking retarded as white people?
Do you want a serious answer? Because I think the answer is yes.
Oh my God. Like, there's so many levels of this story. Like, why was it excluded?
Layers
to
upon.
Begin with?
The exclusion is a tax that is supposed to, well, so the tax is two things, obviously. One, it's supposed to reduce the amount of sugary substances that people consume on the idea that sugar is bad for you, thus the government should put a tax on it. And the second is to fund education for minorities. Just.
What?
Yep.
Both.
But it's one of these things, and it's like with when we were taxing smoking, right? Where it's like, we're going to keep taxing smoking at this incremental amount, like a frog in a frying pan, a boiling frying pan. we're going to keep taxing it this little tiny amount so that people will continue buying it so that we get revenue, but not ever enough that it actually decreases people from using the thing. And so, for instance, the tax on the soda here is 2 cents per ounce. What the fuck is that going to do? No one's going to even notice 2 cents per ounce. But it brings in a money for the city. So, that's the cynical view, I guess.
I'm still really confused. What does this have to do with education for minorities?
The government comes up with taxes and then says it's always going to go to education. Every single tax that comes up, it's going to go to education. It never does, but that's the impetus for it.
And that's how they get people to vote for it, right?
Yeah, because it's for the kids. It's for the kids.
Right, and they never appropriate the funds to where they say they're going to appropriate it for. And then they say they have part of their budget for this outlined, but they don't have the money, so they have to tax us somewhere else.
Yes.
That's like the ultimate California move, isn't it?
And in this instance, you have social justice meets old school terrible tax policy, which is the tax became, quote, an issue of equality. And so we had to expand the tax such that it would also hit more white people. Yes.
I'm just really hung up on this diet soda versus regular soda thing. I don't know why I am, but they're really, it's a tax. It was originally a tax on real sugar versus fake sugar.
Yes.
As if somehow real sugar is worse for you than fake sugar.
Yes.
What?
I don't know. I don't know why you're surprised by this. The government did something based on junk science? Shock and awe.
I just, like, fucking Pete Carroll. I blame this on Pete Carroll. This is Pete Carroll's fault somehow.
I think we should
don't blame Big Balls Pete on this, Justin. He had nothing to do with this.
Run the ball, Pete Carroll.
I don't know what else there is to say about this. This is social justice as applied to tax policy, and it's insane. But the one thing I will say is that
just stop drinking soda, white people. Like, fucking Jesus Christ, diet soda is not healthier than regular soda. It's not. They're both unhealthy. Stop drinking soda, white people. Like, this is the thing that white people do, right? We get money, and we get success, and then, like, to feel superior, we do something stupid like, oh, yeah, I drink diet soda instead of regular soda. Aren't I so healthy? No, you're not fucking healthy. You're just doing it. It's, like, the worst virtue signal ever. I mean, at least Antifa's out there, like, beating people up and putting their lives in jeopardy. You're drinking diet soda. Fuck off.
Basically the same. I don't know why you're so incensed by this. This is... Anyway, this is commonplace to me. Anyway,
that's because you drink diet soda.
No, I don't.
You drink Coke Zero.
I occasionally drink Coke Zero, yes. If I'm going to have a soda.
You know why it's Coke Zero? Called Coke Zero?
Because it has zero calories.
Because there is zero better about it than regular soda.
It's regular soda's too sweet if I'm going to drink soda.
And actually, Justin, what I've seen is it depends on your diet. If you do intermittent fasting, diet soda is actually a pretty good option because it has no calories. You can actually drink that. I mean, I think diet soda tastes like ass, so I just drink coffee when I'm fasting. But it does work if you're intermittent fasting. So, all
right, I'm done trolling the show. Move on.
The one thing I'll say about this is that there's a phrase used in here that we're going to hear a lot more of. It's a phrase that lawyers have been using for a while now. It's disparate impact, which is looking at the law and how it affects categories of people carved up based on whatever interest group you're trying to show this thing has a disparate impact on.
And well, this is the externalities as morality thing that we touched on a couple seasons ago and never went back to. It's the idea that economically there's always an impact on other people. It's an externality. And now they're trying to turn the idea that if your action has an impact on other people, even unintentional, you're morally culpable for that impact.
Yes, not only that, but now we're going to be looking at laws and saying, I mean, think about disparate impact as applied to murder. Like, oh, rules against murder have a disparate impact against people committing murders who happen to be, you know, proportionally 28% black, but the population of black is only 22%. Therefore, we need to allow certain amounts of murder in the black community to make up for the disparate impact.
Oh, my God.
Well,
that's
we're
totally
already allowing lots of murder in the black community, so I don't see how that's an issue.
Thank you for tracking.
That's a really good way of sort of like blowing up leftist policies, Dan, is where you just basically you just ask yourself, okay, like if you took this logic to some kind of insane conclusion, where would it take you? And that's not necessarily a prophecy of where they're going to go with it, but it is a prophecy of the type of direction they're going to go with it. It's like if you can claim that a law affects one race more than another, and then that is somehow makes the law wrong, you now have carte blanche to change all kinds of laws that you want to change, but you can't make a rational case for changing. So this is another really interesting philosophic weapon of the left.
Yeah, disparate impact. You're going to hear that a lot.
Yeah,
you know what else you're hearing a lot lately is cultural.
I have a disparate impact on your mom.
Just took another shot of whiskey after that.
Cultural appropriation, another phrase we're hearing a lot. This story comes from Midsider Mark. Thank you. Magazine editor quits after outrage over column where he says he doesn't believe in cultural appropriation. That's right. My favorite part of this story is the creepy photo of the writer.
Oh my God! You guys, you have to follow the link. It is such a creepy photo. Nothing against the guy, but oh my
Nothing
God.
Nothing against the guy at all.
Hyena from James on that one.
He looks a little bit like he's going to
I went full hyena, and I'm not afraid to admit it.
Yeah.
It's a gross picture.
The editor of the Writers Union of Canada's magazine. The Writers Union of Canada's magazine. Let's put those concepts together. Has resigned after complaints over an article he wrote in which he said he doesn't believe in cultural appropriation. Hal. Need something. Need Zeki. Foreign last name. Editor. Published an opinion piece titled Writer's Prompt, in which he said, in my opinion, anyone anywhere should be encouraged to imagine other peoples, other cultures, other identities. Quote, I'd go so far as to say that there should be even an award for doing so. The Appropriation Prize for best book by an author who writes about people who aren't even remotely like her or him. End quote, which assumes gender, so he could be fired for that too. He went on to argue that Canadian literature remains, quote, exhaustingly white and middle class because writers are discouraged from writing about people and places they don't know. The backlash was nearly immediate on Twitter, of course, where all backlash goes.
And, isn't that redundant these days to say it was almost immediate on Twitter?
Yeah, that's pretty much, I don't have to say that anymore. The magazine said, we apologize unequivocally. And we are in the process of contacting all contributors individually. The intention behind the magazine is to offer a space for honest and challenging discussion and to be sincerely encouraging of all voices. And then there's a giant but. The union recognizes that the intention is not enough and that we failed in the execution in this instance. We failed in the execution. Think about that. Again, as James is going to point out, there is no logic to this. But they failed in the execution of what they just said, which is to offer a space for honest and challenging discussion.
It's funny that they would use that in this. It is really funny that they'd say that in the very statement in which they are stifling open and honest discussion. That is pretty fucking funny.
Wow. So, Justin, cultural appropriation. Have these people appropriated the culture of, intellectualism?
Jewish people, certainly.
Yes, indeed.
Really? I thought that would get more of a reaction out of you guys. Sure. Apparently we embrace. Now everyone's going to think we're anti-Semitic here.
You, maybe. James and I did not laugh, mind you.
We're safe.
No, I mean, here's the funniest thing to me about this article is what's the reason he said he's doing this? Because their literature is white and middle class, right? That's what he's saying?
Yeah.
So he has the same fucking goal as them.
Yeah.
So they're eating each other now. It's ridiculous. It's completely batshit insane. So this guy's left, but he's not far left enough. I also love the fact that the magazine probably published this and was like, oh, this is a good idea. Like, this guy's trying to get more representation for minorities and other cultures. And then when the mob came at them, they were like, oh yeah, I believe what they said. We tried and we had the best intentions, but our execution wasn't good enough. So now it's basically mob rule as to what is moral and what isn't.
Yeah. Jesus.
Indeed. That's, and it's hard to tell, right? Because, again, to point out, this guy is social justice-y. Like, his whole thing is, like, literature is too white. We need more minority stories. And I'm trying to virtue signal here by writing this article in the Writers Union magazine or whatever. And I was like, oh, no, you didn't virtue signal in the right way.
Right.
Therefore, you know, we'll round up this posse and hang your ass. So
the subject of what he wrote doesn't occur to me entirely as virtue signaling. You know what it kind of smells like to me? This is something I used to do in high school, I hate to admit. Although I did it with fairly good intentions, which is what I do in high school is a lot of times I'd kind of catch the point that the history book, a lot of times in AP history class, I'd catch the kind of point that the history book was trying to indoctrinate us with. And this was not me being terribly intellectually honest, although I was in high school, so I'll give myself a little break here. But then what I would do, I'd kind of catch what it is they wanted us to do. But then what I'd do is I'd intentionally make sort of an individualistic variation on what they're doing, where I'm trying to say like, ooh, me too, but I also thought about it a lot on my own and came to an interesting side conclusion that slightly disagrees with yours, but it's still interesting and promotes the same general point. That's what this guy did, and he was still smacked down for it.
I mean, it's still a virtue signal. I mean, absolutely. A failed virtue signal, because he's trying to say, not only do I have the virtue of social justice, but I have the virtue of individuality in social justice. That's what you basically just said.
Yeah, right. He still kind of thinks that individualism has something to do with this, I think, if I'm interpreting it right. Like, you know, he's trying to say like, oh no, look guys, like actually we should promote this. I have the same goals as you do. But then he did. But I think this guy's just a little too honest for the rest of the left. Like he's definitely fairly bad, but he's just not bad enough. He still had a little bit of individualism in there, and he paid the price.
Oh yeah, he certainly has mixed premises. The idea that you can imagine and create fiction for something you are not and write outside of your own experience. That's certainly a rational perspective on fiction.
Right.
And he was trying to reconcile that with social justice, as you're saying. Mm. And it's exactly what you said. They saw that and they were like, get the fuck out of here. You can't write outside your experience. And he's white and male. So they were like, ah, fuck, we win so hard.
The concept of not being able to write outside of your experience or your cultural heritage is to me a form of like slavery for the soul. It's so insidious to basically say this thing that you were determined, like that you had no control over, that you were born into basically, is what you'll be trapped into forever. It's just such a disgusting concept.
It's, I wonder what
horrifying.
Trans people think of that.
I didn't hear you. So
I said, I wonder what trans people think of that.
Right. And there's a certain sense in which it's some hardcore left, and I'm sure some feminists, in fact, accuse trans people of appropriating certain amounts of culture. But just this notion that what you are born into, it's like a caste system for the mind. And it's it's horrifying. It's one of the most disgusting principles in all of social justice, actually. So,
I'm just
no
glad
love
I was born white and a male.
Cultural appropriation. But I mean, look, at least I'm born, you know, half Hispanic and half white. So I at least get two cultures that I can use without calling them appropriation. So
yeah, but one of your cultures sucks.
Sombreros for all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know white people are terrible, Justin, but you know, we'll have to get over
that.
See what happened there.
I know. I set you up for that.
Yeah. Speaking of white people who suck, Chris Pratt.
Oh my dog. This is the
I'm
worst story.
A recurring theme.
Chris Pratt had to apologize for an Instagram post he made where he used the offensive term, listen up. Indeed, who was he offending? Deaf people. Yes, some people apparently were offended by a post that he made where he told people to turn the volume up because by default, Instagram mutes videos. And so he's telling people, hey, you're not going to want to miss what I'm saying. Listen up. And that apparently pissed people off. So Chris Pratt took to Instagram and gave an apology for this, in which he did it entirely in sign language. He said, let's see. When I made a video recently with subtitles and requested that people turn up the volume and not just read the subtitles, it was so people wouldn't scroll past the video. However, I realize now doing so was incredibly insensitive to the many folks out there who depend on subtitles. Okay. So I want to apologize. I have people in my life who are hearing impaired, and the last thing in the world I want to do is offend them or anybody who suffers from hearing loss or any other disability. So truly, from the bottom of my heart, I apologize. This, of course, prompted the internet to attack Chris Pratt. Why? Because, as one person put it, Chris Pratt apologized for being insensitive to deaf people, but he wouldn't bother to learn the correct sign language. So he was excoriated for doing this apology in sign language, but being bad at sign language. Jesus H. Christ. Justin, should Chris Pratt have had to apologize for saying listen up?
He should have had to apologize for being in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is what he should have apologized for.
That's right. That's right.
No, I mean, what about people who don't have Instagram or people who can't access the internet or don't have social media? Shouldn't he apologize to them for not being on social media and he's posting this message that only people on social media can see? I mean, really what this is just he's their latest target.
Insta-privilege.
And they're not going to let up.
Yeah.
He just keeps apologizing. You can't apologize to these people. That's the number one rule. Life lesson out there for you in the midside. If you ever find yourself under attack by a social justice warrior or a group of social justice warriors, do not apologize. Their only way of winning is the same way religion wins. And it's to make you feel guilty for doing what you think is right and for you to admit guilt. He admitted guilt when he apologized for the blue collar thing. Now they're just going to keep hammering him until he's destroyed because he keeps apologizing. That's it. That's all this is. He's the biggest star now. He's shown that he wasn't in line with social justice. He showed weakness. He's done. He's dead. We are seeing the end of Chris Pratt unless he grows a fucking spine and unless Anna Faris gives him his balls back and he stops apologizing.
Yes. It's amazing to me that, you know, I don't think these people are honest in wanting their apology, but even the concept of you have to apologize for offending deaf people because you acknowledge that other people are not deaf. I mean, it's certainly not honest, but even the internal logic of it is insane to me. James, do you have anything further on that?
I mean, all I have to say about this is just fuck you, Chris Pratt. Just fuck you. Like, I liked Chris Pratt. He was a Navy SEAL in this one movie. It was a terrible movie, but he was the only good part of it. Zero Dark Thirty, he was the only good part of it. The woman was good, too. But anyway, you know, I liked him, but fuck you. Fuck you, Chris Pratt. This is so much worse than just actually being a full-blown liberal. Because I get it. He's not aware of the evil of the left. That's fine. But this is just a huge blow to the truth. This is someone who doesn't have a single bone of truth in his body. When something like this happens, he's caving. And if you look, there's a little poll on this article that we posted to, and it says, should Chris Pratt apologize? And so just out of curiosity, I clicked no and then saw how the votes tallied up. Not a scientific poll, but 99% of the participants said no. 1.11% said yes when I happened to use the poll. And this was in this article that we
how many people had voted?
Let me check. This article we posted to is, let's see, how many people returned to poll? I can't tell, but It's got to be, I don't know, I can't tell. But look, it's at least 99 based on the numbers that I'm seeing here. Based on the fact that it's 1.11% who said yes. So maybe one out of 99 people said.
Oh, it's down to 98.9% said no.
The tide is turning.
So, I mean, and so you have apologized to a absolutely minuscule percentage of your fan base. Standing up for the truth would have lost you nothing, and you still couldn't do it. Fuck you, Chris Pratt. Fuck you.
Well, this is something we've been tracking, Daniel. When we talk about the same 50 people, and we talk about on the Obamacare website, they were hiring people to post as if there was a large number of people who supported on the Facebook page, and the comment section's getting shut down. These people pretend that they're the majority by being the loudest. And we buy into it because there's a immediate induction. It's a false induction. But you hear these people are loud and they're out there. Therefore, you think that they're the majority.
It's also a sample bias, which is that when you're looking at your social media, the people who think you shouldn't apologize don't even take a second to shoot you a message for a post that they don't see as controversial to say, don't apologize for this post. Because they don't take that kind of negative action or positive. They don't take an action where the thing they agree with seems non-controversial. That's my point. So you're only going to see the negative. So even if like there are 100 of them, let's say, like 100 in the first couple minutes from this post, how many tens of thousands of people saw it, thought it was 100% appropriate, fine, and didn't say anything? Impossible to know. But you see the overwhelming amount of negative, and therefore you think, oh, this I must be getting backlash for this thing, when it's not. It's the same 50 people.
So. I mean, we could draw an easy comparison here to Batman versus Superman. And what I'm talking about is, if you look at the number of people who saw that movie and the amount of money it made versus the negative comments about it, is it really that hated of a movie? Or is it exactly what you're saying here?
Yeah, no, I agree with you totally.
And I'm using that as an example culturally. Nobody writes things praising what they love. Nobody writes things supporting what they love. Because in a way, ironically, hating something is more of a collective experience now, where loving something is still an individual experience.
That's an incredibly interesting point, something we should delve into more. The point I'm trying to make is something even less, I don't know, profound.
Hold on.
I didn't say less important. I think it's just as important. It's just less profound.
Just nothing is as important as what Justin says, Daniel.
Right now. Hold on.
Where you sniff? Yes, yeah. Got it. Which is, if I'm scrolling by Chris Pratt's post, it doesn't even occur to me that I like this thing. It just doesn't occur to me that this thing is in any way offensive. So there's no action for me to take because there's no impetus for me to think that this thing could cause controversy. Unless I am in that mode of, I need to defend the things I think are going to be controversial, and that's a very rare mode to be in.
Well, that goes back to interpersonal hostility. There are people with that perspective we've talked about over and over again. The idea that you think everything is a war, you think everything is a fight. And I would also argue this is people who have suffered trauma and they have psychological disorders or pain or damage, and they're imprinting it on everyone else. They're forcing it on everyone else.
Yes, well, I won't go that far.
And of course, the people with the agenda.
Could that be psychologizing, Justin?
Yes.
One more time?
Justin's favorite pastime is mass psychology, so.
Yeah. Yes. Well, after masturbation, yes.
Yes, indeed.
Mass psychology, masturbation. What else? Mm-hmm. What else, Daniel?
Catholic mass. Yeah. All those things. One last point on this. James, or whoever wants to answer this. Is what's happening to Chris Pratt an example of, and maybe he's not as virtuous a person as this typically happens to, but an example of sanction of the victim? Where if Pratt basically didn't give in to this nonsense, it would all go away immediately, and they would have no power over him.
Thank you for phrasing your point as a question. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Master of that. Yes.
I mean, that's what I was saying. Really good example. Just don't fucking apologize to these people. It's the same point.
Yeah,
I just give them credence by apologizing to them.
Or, you know, as Jordan Peterson says, he says, we can't give them an inch. Like, this isn't a matter of, and I really like, you guys listen to Jordan Peterson at all?
On and off. Not regularly.
He's got some weird as shit ideas that, like, could somehow be right, I want to say. Like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they make your head do that thing that dogs do when you talk to them, where it's like, huh?
Yeah. Right, yeah, and he's always talking about some kind of weird underlying, oh, and the Virgin Mary, that's the same as a soccer game, you see, because a soccer game has the Immaculate Reception, whereas the Virgin Mary was the Immaculate Conception, and you're like, what the fuck? But then when you think about it, it actually starts to make sense a little bit. You're like, is this bullshit? But anyway, I mean, regardless of Jordan Peterson's theories on, you know, mythology and stuff like that, he has a great point about this. He says, this represents a postmodern philosophy that just represents a hatred of existence and a hatred of life, and we cannot give an inch to it, is what he says, and I'm in full agreement with that.
That's right.
You know what else we shouldn't give an inch to? Probably any of the trailers from this week, at least if anyone agrees with me. Let's talk about that and more in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline laps, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. To start out this week, I want to give a brief review of some music. Usually we talk about movies in the review, but I listened to Paramore's new album, After Laughter, and I was really interested to hear this because I really hated their self-titled, which was the album previously to that. It felt like Hayley Williams was just sort of shooting in the dark to find a style that fit her. And then this album actually had a concept behind it and a style behind it, and I appreciated that, but she is so far off from when they were a pop punk band. Paramore is so far off from that now that I've been sort of searching for the answers. Daniel, if you remember Brand New Eyes, I shared that album with you, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That album is very, it's one of the best pop punk albums ever for me because it's very reality focused. And it's like you have to accept reality in order to move forward with your life, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It's unequivocally about that, I think.
Right. I mean, that's what Brand New Eyes means, opening your eyes to that. And I think, you know, it's right in the sweet spot of what pop punk is and, you know, the sweet spot of good art. But then there was the self-titled album, which was this, as we say with, as you've been saying, Daniel, over and over again with pop music, it's just very inoffensive. And now this new album, it's not inoffensive, but it's literally one of the most depressing things I've ever heard in my entire life. It made me want to cry and feel bad for her. I mean, there's a song called Fake Happy on it. And then there's a song about her husband, Chad, from Newfound Glory, called Rose Colored Boy, all about how she can't see happiness and see the bright side of things. And she knows that he's an optimist and sees the bright side of things because, you know, we've tracked on this show and I've explained to many people and anyone who knows me knows that's why I love Newfound Glory. They just love individualism and love life. And they're married, yet she says that she just can't appreciate his perspective and she needs him to just accept her as she is. And it just makes me wonder how she ended up this way. But broader, on a broader cultural thing, the question I have for you, Daniel, is, are we going to see pop music moving in this direction? Because isn't this, in a way, the logical, emotional progression of all of this inoffensive art we've created, that it can only lead to depression and sadness because you create something that's not real and is not helpful to the soul, and then you end up here?
I mean,
and what I'm wondering is, isn't this a result of her making the self-titled album, which was just completely nothing?
I mean,
so of course she'd end up here.
Yeah, I mean, to use what we were talking about earlier, we're making the diet soda of music now.
Fucking white people!
Yes, and if it was rap, it'd be the diet orange soda of music. But
oh, wow.
That was a joke, everyone. It's called humor.
Jews!
Live with it. Yes, there's something to the point of when you take pop music and you try to remove everything from it that is interesting, controversial, offensive, whatever, you end up with, you know, Twinkies or diet soda or fucking rice cakes or whatever. Like, you end up with this nothing that's completely unoffensive, but it's marketable on a mass scale, and that's all it's good for. And that's not something
that's definitionally what Ain't It Fun from Paramore was, their big single off of their biggest single ever off of their last album.
Yeah, and it's something that people like instinctively just grab for when they're in a kitchen or whatever and just shove it into their pie hole. And that's sort of what pop music or mainstream television or any number of things is. It's the diet soda of art, where it's just like, this thing is unoffensive, it's, you know, it's palatable for most people, and they can just consume it without thought or interest or anything. It's just something that goes into them and then out of them with no with only a tiny bit of blood in their stool. That's really what it is.
But diet soda, if you only drink that, you become unhealthy, do you not?
Yes, and that's part of my point, is if this is the only thing that's nourishing you, and think about this in the sense of nourishing your soul, if this is the only thing that's nourishing you in terms of art, you're going to feel really hollow. It's going to feel kind of sort of meaningless, and I think ultimately, yes, to be a mass psychologizer, it will spread more depression and anxiety and existential dread, basically.
So we will really end up in a post-laughter society or an after-laughter society.
Oh, I see what you did there. Yes.
Now, I don't think Hayley Williams is doing any of this on purpose, no. But I think it's interesting.
And I don't blame artists. Like, take the Kroll approach to this, which is like, they make a gazillion dollars doing this. So it's like, I understand their motive for why they're doing this. It's just a cultural thing, I think. I mean, in terms of pop music, pop art, pop television, whatever, historically speaking, we've always had a pop version of whatever it is. But I think objectively, we've gotten more diet soda-y with that pop version as we progress through time. Like, pop art in Mozart's era was the magic flute. Like, that's what the masses would go see, and what was looked down as lowbrow opera, which we now hold up as one of the best operas of all time. But when he was writing it, that was for, like, he was a little bit embarrassed about it, and, like, that was the whole thing. It was like, this was a lowbrow thing. Now it's, you know, from the sky like a diamond, from the sky like a diamond, like, and I just want to fucking blow my brains out when I hear that on the radio. But
or just work, 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 work.
Yeah.
There are two songs that we're just talking about just work over and over again. I don't know how you guys talk about it trying to be inoffensive. I find it pretty fucking offensive. Like, I don't know, just when I was in high school, whenever I'd hear music like that, I just the image that would come to my mind, or it would be that, like, an angry mob of, like, mindless zombies are pounding on the doors of my mind saying, "Let us in so we can eat your brains."
I mean, I agree with you. Katy Perry is one of the most offensive people I've ever heard in my entire life, but you're assuming that we represent the norm. Our argument is, and I'll speak for myself here, and Daniel, tell me if you agree with me or if I'm stating this correctly, that the argument is that it's made to be inoffensive to the masses in the same way diet soda is.
Yeah, that's my point. And I also don't want to take a hyper-moralistic stand here. While I do think there is some element of morality that goes into this. Like, of course you can have Oreos once in a while. Of course it's fine to eat a Twinkie once in a while or drink a diet soda. Of course it's fine to like some of those things. The point is, when you make it your entire diet, when it's all the thing that nourishes you, that's what causes the unhealth, and it's certainly what causes the unhealth in the spirit as well, is consuming this nonsense all the time.
Right, and what I'm saying is, if you look at the trajectory of Paramore's career and Hayley Williams, I think that After Laughter is a great demonstration of what happens.
Yes.
She went from pop punk. She married one of the greatest pop punk people of all time. I mean, that says something about her sense of life, to making a completely pop album with Paramore, the self-titled album. And now she's in this After Laughter album, which is super depressed.
Yeah.
I think that speaks to something. And I think it speaks to what we're saying here.
Yeah. Indeed. Fun is going through this right now. The band Fun. First album was just tremendous in its scope and its talent. And their second album, which was their breakout album, you know, the thing that was going to sell them to the masses, is like this sterile. After the first two-ish tracks, is like this sterile, horrible garbage music. And I can't even imagine what their next album is going to be.
And you know how Fun got big, right? You know who really helped them?
Hayley Williams?
Yep.
That's why I brought
this
it up.
This stuff is not a coincidence. Just like we see it all in the movie industry, it's the same thing in the other industries as well. It's just, if you're an expert in it and you want to get into that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what we like to talk about more. Let's go to movies.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Okay, this trailer would shock. I would give you a description of it if I knew what it was besides Kirsten Dunst and a bunch of filters.
And Kirsten, like, Dunst. Drugs, I guess, that I've never heard about?
Kirsten Dunst stars in a student film. That's what I saw.
yes, I agree.
Filters. Yeah,
this is an artsy film that comes out of, like, the New York School of Cinematography or whatever, where it's, like, a slow narration over a bunch of filters, over a bunch of overlapping frames, and also pot.
You guys got pot and drugs? I didn't even know that was what... Was that going on in this trailer?
She rolls a cigarette of some kind of leafy substance, but then she starts doing all these other weird chemical things that I can only assume are drugs. Like, she's rubbing something on her lips. She's smelling shit out of a jar. Then
there's
she's like...
a marijuana leaf behind one of the characters. Like a all right. Neon, bright marijuana leaf.
I somehow missed that.
Symbolism.
Wow. Wow. yeah, I can't even tackle this film because I feel like I never truly interacted with it. Like, it's sort of an ethereal mess. So
on the chart, on the website, I'll give you an NA.
Not possible to tackle because it's not actually a thing in reality. So,
James?
I'll tackle it. It did register to me as a thing in reality, but only because I've seen other things like it before that are just meaningless garbage. So
tackle.
And I will tackle this as well because it's completely nonsensical.
Tackle.
I mean, honestly, if you want to see how nonsensical it is and you think we're being ridiculous, just click the link on the midside.com for the episode. We're not making this up.
Second trailer.
War Machine is a Netflix original movie starring Brad Pitt as the general, or I'm not sure what his rank is, but who's in charge of the conflict in Afghanistan. And apparently, he's been told to just manage it, but he wants to win it. And also, he is super incompetent.
I got really depressed after I started watching this, and it did not star Don Cheadle as an Iron Man clone. That's so I'm going to have to tackle it because of that, but I'll also tackle it because I'm tired of Brad Pitt playing this character.
Tackle.
I would like him to play.
This looks like a Coen Brothers movie, right?
I would like him to play a different character, please. Thank
Burn
you.
After Reading.
But not only that, but going all the way back to Inglourious Basterds, get me some Nazi scalps. I'm American general. Burp, 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 burp. Okay, thank you. That was very revolutionary when you did it in that movie. Now it's tired. Please play a different character.
Well, to be fair, he's gone all the way down to Netflix for this.
That's true.
And this is what Netflix does.
Money they paid him to do this?
I'm sure it's an obscene amount. What's unclear to me is if this is based on a true story. I didn't quite get that, but I don't know. That if it was, there might be some interest in it for me, but right now it's a total tackle.
James?
I have a different view on this. Is like, I hate to say this, but it looks actually pretty funny. I'm worried it's going to have a lot of liberal crap in it, but this sort of reminds me of a lot of the humor that I actually hear from, not necessarily my friends, but a lot of people I have talked to, airsofting, who were actually in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they kind of have a dark sense of humor. I don't necessarily jibe with that really dark sense of humor where they're just like, yeah, it was a fucking clusterfuck. It was a big joke. Like, what else is new? Like, I don't necessarily jibe with that, but this film came off as somewhat more innocent to me than, or this trailer came off as somewhat more innocent to me than it may have came off to you guys, because I hear this sort of perspective of what a joke those wars were from people who are actually there and had had the right to sort of have that perspective. And they were a fucking joke from what I heard and from what I judged. And so I'm giving this a chance. I'm giving this a hug, I don't know, sort of a hug, that one. Because I'll watch it and see. I'm really worried it's going to be too cynical for me, but it may capture that sort of feeling I get from a lot of veterans of those wars.
I understand what you're saying, James, and I would grant it that innocence if we were not in the cultural context that we're in.
I know.
Everything is about making America look evil and incompetent.
Yeah. Well, but I don't know. We may not see that. I'm just saying we may not see that. I don't want to judge it before I see it. I want to give it a chance for something that will give me that perspective in a dramatic form. I know. I mean, I'm already building it up way higher than it probably will end up deserving. But I gotta have some fucking hope, Justin. You gotta stop sending me these trailers.
That's what's out there, and that's fine. I will judge it ahead of time for you. I will judge it ahead of time for everyone. Tackle, tackle, tackle,
tackle. Final trailer.
Blade Runner 2049 is Ryan Gosling attempting to bogart a franchise for himself. It has replicants, Jared Leto, Harrison Ford in it, and lots of leftism, specifically California leftism, where, oh, there's walls, and there's poor people on one side, and rich people on the other, and blah, blah. Hey, California, you're the only fucking people who do that, okay? Everywhere else in the country, they don't fucking go, the rich people don't go and live far away from the poor people and put up fucking walls. Stop making movies about it. Also, the workforce is disposable in this because they're replicants.
Yes. And all great societies were built on the backs of disposable people.
Yeah.
That's like the first line in the trailer.
Yeah.
It's also the first line in Das Kapital.
Ayo. Yeah. I think I tackled this in 1982. 2 years before I was born. When I refused to see the shitty movie Blade Runner, the original. So I don't think there's any reason for me to see Blade Runner, the updated Ryan Gosling version, or otherwise known as Blade Runner. How much more money does Harrison Ford need? Tackle.
Tackle.
James?
When I first saw this, I have to admit I was a hug is too strong of a word, but a tentative, like, I'll watch this and maybe it's a good action movie, because I only was able to pick up on a few liberal lines and maybe that isn't a major part of the film. So whatever.
A few liberal lines?
I mean, I'm saying I was only able to pick up on a few. I mean, yeah, when you talked about the wall, like, I can see where you're going with that. I didn't pick up on that when I first watched it. I, of course, picked up on the workforce thing, but you know, I don't know. I guess my standards are so low right now where it's like, if it looks like it has a plot and like a conflict and a Harrison Ford in it, then I'll give it a shot.
Ugh.
I have another complaint.
Yeah. Go. I love it.
Future movies are not set far enough in the future.
Yeah.
2049. Yeah.
2049? That's like tomorrow. We have clones and flying cars and shit. Not gonna happen. I'm sick of this. Also, when you go to the IMDb page, never mind. Forget it. Fuck this movie.
No, James, the reason I picked up the wall thing is I'm so fucking sick of that trope. It's in so many goddamn movies, and it's one of those things you don't understand until you move out here and live out here. Like, you're like, why are movies so obsessed with environmentalism? Oh, it's because their fucking environment doesn't make any fucking sense out here. Oh, and why are they obsessed with this idea that the rich and poor live in different areas and hate each other? Well, because that's the way the fucking rich assholes are out here.
Justin.
Like, what?
I mean, Justin, I've been a rich asshole my entire life who's put up walls around the ruffians around me, you know, as I live silently here in the hills of white privilege.
I'm so, really distressed, you know, by Daniel's tone.
You
like,
know how
what,
certain
what
movies advertise by having a rap on a website where, yeah, like, the entire fucking webpage is the advertiser for this movie? Yeah. I'm on the Blade Runner IMDb and I hit refresh, and the movie that comes up is called The Wall.
This does not prove my fucking point.
I don't even know what the fucking movie is about. It's just you're just complaining about The Wall and literally hit refresh and it's The Wall now playing. Get tickets.
What? Is it a Matt Damon movie or is there something else?
I will take a screenshot and we'll put this up on the midside because it's just too precious.
God,
you're like, why are the Hollywood idiots obsessed with The Wall? Refresh. Watch The Wall.
All right. I am tackling, clearly.
What?
Tackle.
And to finish up this segment, I want to talk about something that's actually relevant to what we were just saying about leftism and movies and everything. So there was, you know, cancellation season is upon us. So that means when they start canceling and renewing TV shows. And there was a major cancellation. Tim Allen's sitcom, Last Man Standing, which is a very right-wing sitcom. It's, you know, Tim Allen's character basically espouses his own views. I think actually one of the writers is friends with Adam Carolla, isn't he?
Yeah, and ironically, he's a super progressive lefty, and he's the head writer.
Right, but he gets the stuff right. He gets it right. And a lot of the stuff he writes is very funny, proving that you can fucking cross the line to do these jobs. But it gets good ratings, yet still, after its sixth season, even though it's been consistent in the ratings for the past four or so seasons, and it's got good ratings for a Friday night slot, it was canceled. And the reason it's interesting it was canceled is on a March episode of Jimmy Kimmel Live, and I'm quoting from the rap here right now, Allen told Kimmel, Tim Allen, said that being a Republican in Hollywood today is like 1930s Germany. You got to be real careful around here. You know, you'll get beat up if you don't believe what everybody believes. So there's an irony here. Is this cancellation proving the point he made to Jimmy Kimmel? And is it because he made the comments to Jimmy Kimmel? This is like fucking Inception, isn't it?
Leftception. Yes. Hard to say. The show got very good ratings. It didn't get stellar ratings, but it got very good ratings for a sitcom. Also, six seasons. Also, Tim Allen's expensive. So, like, there are plausible reasons for why it was canceled. But, to use the lefty version of Occam's razor, the show was Republican, and that's probably why it was canceled. In the era of Trump, there can be no intellectual diversity on television because the only diversity the left can handle is in the White House, and they already hate that. So.
Yeah, and the show would routinely take shots at Hillary and Obama, and it would be pro-Trump.
Yeah. So, I will say, by the way, Justin, that I know you kind of like the show. I thought the show was fucking retarded, and I stopped watching it because I thought it was so stupid. But
I mean, it's a typical sitcom. It's not well-produced. It's not that well-written. I liked the fact that there was something different out there, and I don't know, I identified with Tim Allen's character, where he's kind of a dick to everyone and just makes fun of what the shit they say. Like,
I guess this is part of my I don't identify with fictional characters problem, but that seems like the perfect character for you to identify
Yeah,
with.
Like if I had money and a family, I think I would pretty much be that character. I mean, he's a football fan too. Like, what besides the religion, that's the only thing that I think I didn't agree with the character on.
Yeah.
I mean, in one episode, he has to give a speech at his daughter's school at graduation, and they ask him to take out a bunch of stuff because there are microaggressions, and then he just starts making fun of microaggressions.
Yeah, we can't have that. So.
All right, any other final comments on this, or are we ready to move on?
I actually do have a final comment. When they accused him of trivializing the suffering of those during World War II, of the Jews and how they suffered during Nazi Germany, there was no comment from Tim Allen on that. And again, this is the cowardice I'm talking about, where it's like, okay, you've already lost your job, and now you're not willing to say, no, fuck you, it was rhetorical, I didn't literally mean that I suffered the same, that I'm not in a fucking gas chamber, of course that's not what I meant that, it was just a turn of phrase, and the fact that he wasn't willing to comment on that and talk about the... And talk about the obvious exaggeration and the use of the manipulation of our emotions against anyone who's their political enemies. It's just more of this cowardice. We can't yield an inch again. And we do.
I don't know, though. Tim Allen did. I mean, I kind of think that if he said anything, it would be granting it credence. And it's sort of like he said the thing. They proved him right by canceling him. It's sort of the best thing to do is just shut up and let fucking reality prove to people.
Yeah, maybe he just doesn't have the words to do what he needs to do here. This is a lot different than Chris Pratt.
Yeah, I mean, why say anything? I think they made themselves look like huge assholes by canceling the show after he said that.
I feel like if you had the right words, you could say something, but maybe he just didn't.
Well, to be fair, he is an actor, and the person who was writing his good words on the show is apparently a leftist, so... that probably tells you all you need to know about Tim Allen.
Yeah.
Not only a leftist, by the way, a leftist who completely and utterly despises Trump and everything he stands for and, like, cried on Election Day and, like, as left as you can possibly get. So.
There you go. Do we want to talk about other people who are as left as you can possibly get? We should do that in Reddit on Reddit.
These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, whore.
First Reddit. Have you ever met a stranger who you never saw again that you still think about on occasion?
Yeah, that really hot chick on the metro.
Really? You went that way? Are you making fun of me preemptively?
Yes.
It wasn't how I was going to answer, but thank you for turning me into a cartoon character.
I figured you were going to have a spank bank answer. So
no, I'm not going to.
Yeah, I couldn't actually think of anyone who I met as a stranger who I never saw again that I still think about. There are people with whom I interact for very brief periods of time, not necessarily strangers who I would still like to see today, or it'd be interesting to know where they are or whatever, but I don't have a really good answer for this, which is why I went with a joke right off the bat. So,
James, you have an answer?
Yeah, mine's, sort of goes along with that joke. I was at the airport once and I saw this attractive woman and went up to her and then just like we actually just got a beer because we were waiting at the airport and it turns out she lived in New York, so I never saw her again. But she was a few years older than me and she said just a lot of things that really – this is when I worked at the patent office and it was my first year kind of out of school and actually having a job. And she just said a lot of things that I could have said to myself 2 years later if I hadn't first talked to her, if that makes, like she said a lot of things that like a two year older version of myself could have said to myself, which is one of the biggest things she said was, she just said, oh yeah, once you're out of school and you've had a job for a few years, a lot of your insecurities and self-esteem issues go away because, and then implicitly I took that to mean because you're actually fucking doing productive work. she just had so many answers that I didn't have yet, you know, having just gotten out of school and being such a serious professional. She just had a lot of and deep insights. A lot of people know that in their guts, but she actually was able to put it into words. And I never forgot that. So.
See, Daniel, that's a good one.
It is. I hate people, so.
Well, I mean, so I only approached her because she was hot, but like she was in a sense that hot girl from the airport. But like, you know, like, I mean, that's just the but, you know, I remembered her for a completely different reason.
Yeah, but I mean, I would argue that Pittsburgh's not that far from New York when you were living there. And how often is it you talk to the hot girl in the airport and she actually has something profound to say and you just let her walk away?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, she did give me her business card.
There you go. Come on.
I mean,
man.
I never called her. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
come on, man.
God works in mysterious ways.
But, Daniel, I actually have an answer that's similar to what you said about hating people. It's actually stupid people who stick with me the longest. And then I remember
of course.
Away.
Of fucking course.
So the example I am going to give this time is, do you remember when we went to Busch Gardens in Williamsburg or wherever it was?
I remember that event, yes.
Do you remember how I was telling you about the Pittsburgh Steelers fan I met and what he was telling me?
No.
Well, he was talking to me all about football and everything and about Brady and Drew Bledsoe. Drew Bledsoe's the quarterback that got hurt before Tom Brady took over. And he started telling me when Drew Bledsoe got hurt. And I was like, no, this is when it happened. And he kept saying to me, no, this is when it happened. And I said to him, no, this is when it happened. And he would not back down. He was so sure when he was completely fucking wrong. And I will always remember that because he's standing there talking to a lifelong Patriots fan who was telling him how much he loves and knows the Patriots. And he still, in the face of me telling him he was wrong, could not back down from his point. And I remember that.
Jesus Christ, I basically married you. You realize this, right? FISA will still talk about a cashier from a coffee shop who slighted her 7 years ago.
Yep. 100%.
You will still bring up that fucking story every seventh day. She keeps it alive.
Because she wants to go back.
Keep the anger alive in your heart.
Jesus Christ.
She wants to go back. I want to go back with her. And what the fuck did the cashier do?
It's don't know. It's like it was a look she gave her, and then she gave her attitude, and it like ruined her whole fucking day. I don't even remember the. I don't remember the exact details because every time the story comes up, I blank. I just go into like a minor vegetative state.
See, I have a similar story to that from Costco. So you know how like you can go into Costco or Sam's Club, and you can like buy the hot dogs or the pizza.
Okay.
For like lunch, you can buy one hot dog or a slice of pizza. Well, when you do that, you don't have to wait in line to get out, right? You can just leave because you don't have to like be like, hey, here's my receipt. I bought this fucking like pizza. Like there's an exchange of money there. You don't have to wait in line while they fucking check your receipts. So I was there with my ex and we walked to the front of the line and leave and we just wave. And as we're going to the front of the line, this woman with like a Band-Aid across her face starts yelling at us. And specifically starts yelling at my ex, because when you put two crazy people together, that's what happens. And just starts yelling. And I just look at her, I go, calm down, we bought food. And she starts yelling at me, you don't get to fucking cut the line, you can just leave. And I just literally said, fuck you to her, and kept walking.
Oh my god, Justin.
I will always remember that, because it's like, are you that entitled and you have that much of a chip on your shoulder that you get mad that we're following the proper rules and we're not wasting our time waiting in line behind your dumbass?
She had
the fact that she had a Band-Aid on her face. Why? A Band-Aid on your face. Like, when you cut yourself on your face, do you put a Band-Aid on your face?
One, I don't do much face cutting. Two, I just have this inverse experience of reality that you and my wife apparently have. Which is, if someone was yelling at me about cutting a line in a given place, there's at least a 99.5% chance I would not notice. I would just completely be in my own space. Someone would be yelling, and I'd think in my head, is someone yelling at someone? That's weird. And I would just move on with my fucking life. Or if I noticed someone was yelling at me, I would look at them, I would look down at my food, I would look back at them, and then I would just walk away. And I would forgot that it happened until 10 weeks later when I was in Costco again and someone brought it up. Like, I don't experience reality the way you and Fiza do.
See, this is, I mean, to psychologize, this is because it's your surety of yourself. And not to say that I don't have self-esteem, but it's when you've been reprimanded enough growing up that everything you're doing is wrong and offensive to people. You are just very sensitive to the people around you and how they feel and the way they're reacting. That's what it is.
I completely understand that. And Fiza had that experience with her parents and being a woman in a Muslim country. And I get that. But, you know.
Yeah, that's right. My parents treated me like I was a Muslim woman.
How dare you? How dare you compare that experience? Oh, wait. Actually, no. Muslim culture is fine. There's nothing hardship about it.
No, that's right. It's the best.
All right. Next Reddit. Serious Redditors with vast general knowledge, how do you acquire it?
Seriously? Trivial Pursuit.
Not the answer I expected.
I mean, I have other ways, but starting at a very, like, basically as early as I could talk, my mother would play Trivial Pursuit with me. Not the children's version that's like, what are the three primary colors? No, fuck that. We would play adult, full-blown, hard-ass Trivial Pursuit before it got shit easy in the 2000s, and she never fucking let me win. Ever. Like, she would rub it in my face that she won. She'd be like, well, beat you again 10 times in a row. You're going to have to learn this stuff if you're going to beat me. And I just remember, like, the day I finally fucking beat her to a pursuit was, like, the greatest achievement of my life up to that point. It was such a wonderful life lesson that I will never forget ever. But that, I mean, like, to this day, I still, it's like someone's like, oh, yeah, the author, who wrote the Joy Luck Club? And I'm like, oh, Amy Tan. It's like, what? How do you fucking know that? It's like, I've never read it. I just completely Trivial Pursuit. That's in its entirety. Other than that, I read a lot, but
I love how you said my answer just like under your breath.
Yeah.
That's it. It's just read, pay attention, fucking gather as much information as possible. How do I know so much about movies and shit? After I see a movie, if it's reasonably interesting, I Google it, I read the Wikipedia page, then I go to a bunch of different articles about it. That's how I learn all this shit.
Yeah.
For me, all of those things are of course true, but the thing I definitely thought of when I read this question is on top of everything you guys are saying, just reading and being extremely curious and having a commitment to knowing lots of things is, once you have all of those things, here are two things that help, is always have a commitment to connecting all of your knowledge together. So when you learn one thing, try to ask yourself, is that consistent with everything else I know? And then give it a yes or a no. And then if a yes, why is it consistent with everything else you know? Oh, because that one connect, you know, that leads to that and that, you know. And so you see the connection. And that, like, that just you don't even need to have a terribly good memory if you're doing a lot of connecting. That's the best way to do it. And then also have a constant commitment to applying what you know. Always be looking for ways of applying what you know. The way I ended up doing this is that I just loved telling people things that I knew when I was really young is really all it came down to. But that is a way of applying it. I just love telling people, like, well, Bill Nye the Science Guy taught me that, you know, blah blah blah, you know, and I just love telling people.
Or you could start a podcast.
Right, and that's my adult way of doing that. But
I applied my knowledge by playing Jeopardy.
Right, yeah, right. And always be committed to sort of doing that. I don't know, like, I just think of sort of part of how I got into math, or how I never got into it. It was just always present for me, is that, you know, I'm walking around the track for PE, and I do one lap, and I say, oh, they told me to walk a whole mile, so I'm 1/4 done. Like, I'm always thinking in terms of the math. Like, oh, I have this much time left to finish the project. I have, you know, always just thinking in terms of math, like always making a point to apply the knowledge to help me in everyday life.
That's interesting. You're doing it in a mathematical way. When I was doing that, I was like, shit, I gotta do this 3 more fucking times.
I was a glass 1/4 full kind of a guy. I was like, you know, it's like, okay, I'm 1/4 done, you know?
All right, last Reddit. And I'm really interested to see the answers to your guys' answers to this question. What event divided your life into before and after?
There are many ways to split one's life, right? So I don't think there's necessarily one answer for this question for me. But the way that's most profound is probably one that is not surprising and or all that interesting, which is before and after reading Atlas Shrugged. And it honestly was a drastic change. I went from being the sort of existential dread kid to, holy crap, can this possibly be right? And basically like turning my entire philosophical life around because of it. And
wow.
Not even just philosophical life, but like life. Not to create a stupid, unnecessary divide. But, you know, understanding what can make me, not what specifically, but how to become happy and how to live a moral life and what I should be fighting for, etc. And it was based on this leftover desire I had to prove, you know, this philosopher wrong. So I read Atlas Shrugged, and unlike many people, my expression was not, this is right and true and good. It was, this must be wrong, and I will be the person to discover how wrong it is. And then spending 3 years trying to do that, and at the end being like, oh, well, fuck. So.
And when did you read it?
The summer after my sophomore year of college. So right in the middle of my college experience, I had a radical, life-altering philosophical experience and completely changed the way I did everything.
And when was the end of those 3 years then?
My end of my first year at Clemson.
When you met me?
Yes.
Coincidence?
Yes, entirely.
James, are you going to tell your Atlas Shrugged story? Is that where we're going
here? My Atlas Shrugged story is just too similar to Daniel's to be terribly interesting. But let me ask you that. I'm just going to highlight the ways it's different from Daniel's.
Was that your before and after story before he took it?
Absolutely. Yes, it was. Yeah.
Interesting.
Was object, not Atlas Shrugged, but objectivism. I didn't read Atlas Shrugged until I was pretty much an objectivist. I actually kind of started with Rand's, I read The Fountainhead and then read the nonfiction. The Fountainhead kind of gave me a flavor. Actually, sort of interesting story. The turning point is I was miserable in this relationship. I was a freshman in college and I had read The Fountainhead and I had heard, and I found Howard Roark to be kind of weird, but I was definitely like, I don't really relate to this guy personally, but this is the ethic. This is an ethic that has something to it. This extreme individualism I definitely believe in using your own rationality to navigate the world and having your own standards and your own vision for your life. And I heard that Rand was associated with selfishness, and I wasn't on board with that yet, but I was miserable in this relationship I was in. And I said, you know what? I'm going to try being selfish. I'm going to break up with this girl. And I did. And that was that you can almost say that was like psychologically the before and after, where I'm like, wow, that really worked. Like being selfish actually really helps you be happy. Like that was because I sort of bought into the altruist notion that if you're selfish, then you don't care about other people. And therefore, you know, your life is just going to kind of be lonely and you don't, it doesn't mean anything. But here's the difference between, but I went through a very, a long phase, not 3 years, but I went through a fairly long phase of thinking she was wrong and trying to disprove her. I thought I have to disprove this because the arguments are so good, yet they have to be wrong based on everything I think I know. And I came around a lot quicker than 3 years. But here's the difference between my story and yours, Daniel, and I always find this very interesting. I never had a period of I don't want to say nihilism. I never had a period where I didn't believe in anything, like of existentialism. Is that what you were saying that you had? You had a period where like, damn, it seems like nothing really matters. I never had that.
Did nothing matter, but that truth was impossible, which is, you know, ironically how I got into rhetoric. Because I decided that rhetoric was the most important art if there was no truth, because it was only what you could convince other people of.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who had that sort of phase in between, like, basically religion and objectivism, where they have religion and then they hear someone like Christopher Dawkins or I'm mixing them up, Richard Dawkins or Christopher Hitchens, and they're convinced by the logic of those arguments, but then once that logic has its way, you're just like, oh great, now I don't have anything. Now I have nothing. And I something I always found interesting is I never was able to entertain the idea that there is no truth and there are no ideal, like there are no ideals. And I always wonder like, huh, like have I really gone through the whole journey yet? Cause I never did that. I went from a sort of my own version of Catholicism, almost like a Spinozan sort of like rationalist religion, to straight to objectivism. So that's a notable point of difference I always notice between myself and a lot of other objectivists.
Justin, I hope you don't have an Atlas Shrugged story.
No, so many conversion stories. I don't have an Atlas Shrugged story at all. I mean, while we're bringing that up, you know what my reaction when I read Atlas Shrugged was, right?
Yes.
I was just sort of like, yeah, this is everything that I've always thought, better than I ever could have said it. I mean, I was arguing in high school that morality was objective. I just couldn't prove it. I was like, it has to be. Like, I know it's objective. I was like, it's like anything else. You can just discover it. And people were like, you're dumb. So, I mean, that was just the way I was. Go ahead.
Oh, I always said that too, but before you move on, were you super surprised at the selfishness part of it though? Like, was that hard for you to swallow, or was that like, just, yeah, that's true too. I always thought that too.
No, it was a logical way of saying what was already said. I mean, if you think about it, like, why are we smuggling in this premise that selfish means you are abusing other people? That doesn't make any sense. You just take care of yourself first. And it's because of, you know, to go back to, and this leads into my before and after as well, but this is what we were talking about with how I'm similar to Fiza. When you're sort of isolated by your family, you just sort of learn to exist like that on your own. It just becomes your modality of existence. You have to accept that. So just my early experiences made me realize that on just an experiential level before I ever encountered the philosophy or anything. It was just sort of my existence. I hadn't properly integrated it or healthily integrated it.
And to anecdotally back up your point, Fiza's experience was very similar to that as well, which is she always, because of the way she was treated, she felt like it had to be her first, and she wanted to have the best life she could have, and she fucking hated her family and had no sort of interest in the quote-unquote collective family or religion or whatever. It's just that she felt really bad about it. Like, she felt guilty for feeling that way.
Yeah, and so, this actually leads perfectly into my story. I didn't feel so much guilty or anything, but I felt like deep down that there was probably something wrong with me that I couldn't make that connection with my family because they were so adamant about the way they were treating me and that I was wrong. And that the way I acted was wrong, that the way I was wrong, that I felt that there deep down had to have been something wrong with me, and that affected my social relationships and the way I interacted with the world. And that's my before and after, is the event that made me finally let all of that go and start just questioning everything they'd ever told me in any way they had ever acted towards me. There's actually an article about it on the Midside. Not that I'm telling people to go find it. I'm not going to say what it is. Although, if you really want to piss off my mom, read the story because she hates that it's still up there. But December 2014. Daniel, this is actually related to you. So when you were living out here with Fiza, you found out going to Vegas was cheap for Christmas.
Yes.
So you did. So in December 2013, I went with my girlfriend at the time. And then December 2014, we were going to go again. And of course, my family decided to hijack this trip. And my mom turned it into like a family trip and everything with my brother and his wife and my parents and me and my ex. And the before and after for me is before Britney Spears and after Britney Spears. Because my parents brought us all to the Britney Spears show. And then afterwards, and I won't go into the details of the incident and everything, but I started fighting with my ex, of course. And then I started fighting with my family. And my immediate instinct, which was proper and healthy at the time, but I couldn't bring myself to do it because, ironically, out of guilt, as you're saying with Fiza, my immediate instinct was to leave them all. Just pack my shit and leave Vegas, including my ex, and just say, I had driven out there with Max, and just say, fucking figure it out yourself, fend for yourself. I don't want to be here anymore. I shouldn't be here anymore. No, I didn't, because I especially felt guilty about leaving my ex, but it was at that point that I started saying, wait, none of these people have my best interests at heart. And this goes to your point about selfishness, James. I always knew that being selfish didn't mean you didn't take other people's best interests at heart. It meant that if you care about people, you're able to think about, I'm not going to act in a way that harms them because they're valuable to me and I would expect the same from them. But I had never learned to stand up for that for myself because my family was never like that. So based on this event, I just sat back and I started questioning all of those things about the way they had treated me, the things that I had internalized that were psychological contradictions to the philosophy I always held in my life and the sense of life I always held.
That's kind of like a conversion story.
Is it?
A little bit.
I mean, yeah, all of these are kind of going to be a sort of conversion, because if something's a turning point in your life, it's going to necessarily be a conceptual turning point. After that, I thought of everything differently. Yeah. You know, it's a sort of conversion. Yeah.
Right. That's why when Daniel, you said that before and after, there are many before and afters. There are more many events that are before and after, like before I went to Clemson, after I went to Clemson. But to me, a before and after story is sort of like when you question and challenge all of your basic beliefs or on some level.
Yeah. Before memes, after memes, you know.
That's certainly our society. We're in a post-meme society. Forget post-truth.
We are.
All right. Yeah. Let's sum up this episode. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned definitively, with zero doubt and no more hesitating and hemming and hawing, that Donald Trump is a fucking idiot. No more excuses.
James?
I learned something interesting about Daniel. I did not realize you went through an existential phase, and that's actually kind of, I don't know. I know all the other INTJs I know also went through an existential phase. I wonder if that's something. I'm ENTJ, and I never did, so I don't know. Maybe that's a thing.
Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that I am the equivalent of a Muslim girl coming to America and growing up. That's what I learned.
That's right. Your burqa brings all the boys to the yard. Yeah. If you learned something this week, especially about oppressing deaf people, why don't you tell us on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat at the Midside. That's at the Midside. That's right. Where we're posting social media things. We're recording this on Mother's Day. Justin put up a picture of Batman holding a sign that says Save Martha. It's kind of clever. And we're posting stuff there. You can send us suggestions for news stories. I love the fact that we get news stories from our listeners, the Midsiders out there, because it means I have to do less work. I've also started receiving private messages from Midsiders giving me stories for Woke or Joke, which is fucking awesome.
Wait. I'm the one who gathers the news every week.
No, well, yes-ish. No, you know, go fuck yourself. You gather some news, but I put a ton of news stories in the chat every week, and they're That's all submissions fair. For news. You just ignore most of them.
That's fair.
Yes, indeed. But, nonetheless, I like the fact that Midsiders are sending me personal messages with Woker joke stories. Sometimes they're stories that we've already seen in the thread, like Midsider Ronnie, I believe, sent me Trayvon Martin getting a honorary degree story, which would be perfect for Woker joke, except that it already went into the Welcome to the Midside thread. But nonetheless, keep that up. Go to the midside.com.
And to be clear, we're going to keep playing it. We're just not going to play the game every week.
Yes, indeed. We are going to keep playing it. It's just
so if you
hard.
Want to keep submitting stuff, give us more final segment ideas because we want to have a rotation of final segments.
Yeah, keep it coming. Keep it coming.
That's right. Absolutely. You can also go to themidside.com/podcast. You can see the archive of podcasts there, or you can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play, leaving us a 5-star review on those platforms. 5 stars helps us move up the rankings. And my God, do we like moving up the rankings. It's a phenomenal feeling when we can pass shows that have been on for years and years and years and years who have large audiences, but we pass them because we have better ratings, motherfuckers. Perfect 5-star score so far. Let's keep that up. Of course, there is patreon.com/themidside, as Justin mentioned at the top of the show. That's a place where you can give us just a few pennies back or a couple dollars back if you're so generous. Helps us keep the lights on. And how it works is you pledge to give us, let's say, $1 per show, and it only charges you when we create content. That's right. You're not giving us a subscription for nothing. You're not sending us money for nothing. You're sending us money for content that's created. And that helps us buy things like microphones and computers and shit like that. So, and if you can't do any of that, we understand. Money's tight. The economy sucks. Trump's president. You can always tell a friend. Tell a friend! Tell your mom! We're recording this on Mother's Day. Tell your mom. Turn your mom onto the show. We need more moms listening to this show. That's what we need. Right now it's a giant
sausage
fest.
Turn your mom onto the show so I don't have to turn your mom on.
That's right. We need fewer not moms and more moms. That's what we need.
Fewer moms getting turned on by Justin.
That's right. I am for that. I advocate for that.
Absolutely. So, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend. Am I missing anything, guys? I think that's about it. We love you, and until next week, see you soon.
This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a...
I thought you were going to say have a Mother's Day, but